Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. It is time for Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Our author today, Dr. Aaron Cariotti. He is a psychiatrist, director of the program in bioethics and American democracy at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the director of the Health and Human Flourishing Program at the Zephyr Institute in Palo Alto, California. He has a book, The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. I want to thank you for being with us this morning. And of course, I think everybody recognized that to some degree, government and its role in our lives have changed. Some people believe it was necessary. I think most people listening to this program felt that this was seen as an opportunity to grab power by people in a position right. of power. And you were really there on the front lines and have a unique perspective, one that probably gave much more insight into what was going on. If you would, begin by telling us a little bit about that experience that you had in your capacity when it came to COVID and the way that COVID and those who asked questions were dealt with.
Sure. So up until last December, I had spent my entire 15-year career as a professor in the School of Medicine at the University of California, Irvine, where I also directed the medical ethics program. And I was involved there in both consulting on and seeing COVID patients, including patients who were dying of the illness, but also devising our pandemic policies for the entire UC system. And when the vaccine mandate came out, our group of ethicists was not consulted on it. I felt that there were some serious ethical problems with it, and even legal and constitutional problems with these vaccine mandates. So I ended up challenging the University of California's vaccine mandate in federal court. And 1 year ago yesterday, they placed me on unpaid suspension. And then a month later, they ended up firing me before my case was decided. The case is actually still in federal court being litigated. So this book, The New Abnormal, is in part an attempt to make sense of not only why policies that were ineffective and harmful were rolled out during the pandemic, but also why they continued for so long. And more importantly, how the whole infrastructure of surveillance and control and expanded executive powers that we saw during the pandemic, how that's going to be deployed in the future. Because I think we saw not just a novel public health response, but we saw a novel system of governing and controlling populations that was put in place during the pandemic. And it's been in the works actually for about 20 years, sort of behind the scenes, but really manifested more fully in the last 3 years during COVID. But even though, you know, most of us are certainly ready to put COVID behind us, what I describe in the book is the fact that this infrastructure is still in place and it will be used for real or invented public health emergencies in the future. So we have to be aware of what the next steps in this process look like so that we don't relinquish any more of our rights and freedoms.
I suppose one of the reasons it became so pronounced during COVID is because it was so quick, and the attack on people that did ask questions was so swift and severe, and that was not something right. we were so accustomed to. But you mentioned this has been in the works for some time. What are the origins behind this biomedical security state?
Yeah, so the biosecurity model really began to take hold in various administrative agencies at the federal level, public health agencies, national security and intelligence agencies, shortly after 9/11, so around 2001. And those agencies were mostly focused on terrorism for about 10 years. But really for the last decade, there's been a shift toward a focus on naturally occurring or, you know, man-made biological weapons as the new threat that we need to focus our attention on. So the sort of military-industrial complex has adopted this biosecurity model for, you know, an ever-present enemy that can never be fully eradicated. And the COVID pandemic was an opportunity to put that model into practice with novel forms of control, like society-wide lockdowns and school closures, with things like vaccine mandates and vaccine passports. If you would have told someone in 2019 that they would have to show a QR code to get on a plane, get on a train, go to a restaurant, get back into their country of origin. And this QR code demonstrated that they had basically done what public health authorities wanted them to do, including, you know, being injected with a novel vaccine or novel gene therapy that they may or may not have wanted. You know, people would have told you in 2018 that sounds insane, and Americans would never, you know, allow themselves to be subjected to that level of control. But after the prolonged trauma, really, of lockdowns, school closures, social distancing, masking, for the better part of a year, you know, we were prepared to do just about anything to get a semblance of normal life back. So those kinds of carrots and sticks were deployed to, I would suggest, to really to coerce Americans into adopting this biosecurity model that involves mass surveillance. You know, one way to understand what I'm talking about with this idea of the biomedical security state is it's kind of a melding of three things: an increasingly militarized public health is the first element, digital technologies of surveillance and control, that's the second element, the smartphone that's been available since 2007 when the iPhone was invented. And the third element is these instruments are backed up by the police powers of the state. And so this biosecurity model has been really developed over the last 20 years. And I describe the history of that in the new abnormal. It manifested more fully during the pandemic, but there are next steps in the process, which I also talk about in the book, the rollout of digital IDs tied to biometric data, like your iris scan, your fingerprint, your facial scan. Central bank digital currencies that will be tied into that digital ID system that will allow the government and other private actors to monitor all of your financial transactions and potentially lock you out of financial markets if you don't behave. So what we saw during COVID, in a sense, if we don't sort of wake up and understand this biomedical security model, COVID will have been just sort of the beginning in the advance of this new mode of governance.
We're talking with our author of the week, Dr. Aaron Cariotti. The book is The New Normal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. As, again, while you were on the front lines and as this unfolded, did you see it as, well, we knew it was coming, it's just a matter of time, this biomedical security state? Or were you also caught off guard by it? I mean, I would just imagine, and I'm not a scientist, but I remember in fifth grade being in science club and learning about the scientific method and how important that was. And and my recognition as a layman was like, the new scientific method was, well, what does Fauci say? And then that's all you need to know. and so it just seemed to fly in the face of everything scientific. So I can only imagine somebody who was in your position and does have that approach. It must have been horrifying. Were you completely surprised, or again, did you think, well, we knew this was eventually going to happen, and here it is?
Well, I was surprised. I did not see this coming. Initially, I did not understand what was happening. I could see the damage being done, for example, by lockdowns in 2020. And I wrote a piece in 2020 called The Other Pandemic, describing the mental health harms of lockdowns that I was seeing clinically, but that was also at that time starting to be confirmed by research studies. So it took me some time to dig into not only what was happening, but more importantly, why it was happening. And it was in the course of trying to figure out, in a sense, what happened to me when I, you know, stepped out of line and challenged one of these policies I lost my job, and I could see many other people getting steamrolled in that way by these policies. So it was an attempt to understand what had happened to me, what was happening to patients, what was happening at the population level to people's health and well-being and their ability to flourish. And so it was really about, you know, 2 years during 2020, 2021 of trying to drill down and figure out what was going on that allowed me to write and then publish the book now in 2022.
You write about scientism and transhumanism. Would you explain what that is?
Yeah. So both of these are ideologies that are part of what is helping to advance this biosecurity model. Scientism, which needs to be distinguished from science. Science is a method for investigating the natural world. But scientism is an unprovable ideology that says that science is the only valid form of knowledge. So ethical, you know, metaphysical, religious claims related to values, claims that cannot be established empirically, those are just nonsense and, you know, not worth considering or discussing. Scientism actually destroys science because it claims to have a monopoly on knowledge, and it claims to, you know, endow certain people as representatives of science. You know, a politician can say, follow the science or follow the experts. But of course, he's tapping and picking which scientists he's going to endorse and which side of scientific debates he's going to endorse. And this actually forecloses the process of science, because good science is characterized by hypothesis, by conjecture, by refutation, debate. You know, you take a group of a dozen scientists and you put them in a room together, they're going to argue endlessly about the nuances of this study and about the methods and about the, you know, the salience or the upshot of the findings, or about, you know, the research as a whole in a particular field. That's what scientists do. So scientism is this, you can think of it as the totalitarian conception of science, where science is sort of weaponized and used as a means to advance, whether it's political power or an economic agenda. Transhumanism is an ideology, really a kind of pseudo-religion, that sounds science fiction-y, but it's actually very influential among big tech elites in Silicon Valley and among, you know, many global elites as well. So it's an ideology that we have to take seriously. But transhumanism proposes to use science and technology not just to cure disease and treat or heal the sick, but to deploy science and technology to try to make human beings, in a sense, more than human, to enhance them, to transcend the limitations of our body, whether it's through gene editing or cybernetics. And the ultimate goal of transhumanism, the reason why I say it's a kind of pseudo-religion, is that eventually we will be able to discard the body entirely. We will be able to technologically enhance ourselves in such a way that the body never breaks down, that we literally live forever. And, you know, some of the more dreamy aspects of this involve ideas like, you know, someday we'll be able to upload the contents of our mind into a computer in the cloud and, you know, live on forever in the mainframe. Transhumanism, I argue in the New Abnormal, I argue that transhumanism is influential among many of the people and the institutions that advanced our pandemic policies. And the biomedical security state dovetails with the ideology of transhumanism in important ways that I think, you know, we need to understand to see where some of these measures are going to take us next.
And final question with Dr. Aaron Cariotti, our author of the week, The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. It's one thing, as we saw with COVID and the way that it was dealt with on a national level. You have these national people that send out these messages, and people, you know, when it comes to politicians in particular, are naturally skeptical. But what a lot of Americans saw, and we saw it here, just, you know, locally, you have people that you know, and you may not really know them, but they're in the news, they're local people. And we had, he isn't any longer, but at the time, the CEO of one of our local hospitals that was tweeting or putting out on social media that anyone questioning, you know, the quote science was responsible for people dying. And you know, how, what is, and then that same person gets awards for doing such a great job. How is it that the average person who is genuinely interested in the scientific approach, yet they are deemed a danger to society by these so-called experts? What's the remedy for this?
Yeah, so that's a terrific question. And I think the first thing is that people need to regain their confidence in their own common sense and in their own rationality. So you may not be an epidemiologist, you may not be a virologist, fine. But you are a rational human being, and all of us participate in a shared rationality that allows us to inquire, to discuss, and to debate. So the weaponization of science in the way that you just described actually just attempts to exclude people from rational conversation, from public life. And so people need to regain their confidence that, yes, I may not be an expert in this particular scientific discipline, but I can spot a logical contradiction. I can see that, you know, what the so-called experts were saying last month is the opposite of what they're saying this month. I can see that their premises don't logically follow, or their conclusions don't logically follow from their premises. I can open my eyes and observe what's going on around me and understand that, you know, this particular intervention doesn't make sense. You know, I see that it's nonsensical to walk into a restaurant wearing a mask when I'm standing and then take the mask off when I'm sitting down. So I think the first step is for us to regain our confidence in our own ability to observe and to inquire and to ask questions. The 20th century political theorist Eric Voegelin, who studied the 20th century totalitarianisms, said that the central feature of all totalitarian systems is not concentration camps. It's not secret police, you know, men in jackboots, or even mass surveillance. As horrifying as all those things are, the central feature of all totalitarian systems is the forbidding of certain questions, the inability to ask questions. Shut up, you don't understand what you're talking about. You know, you don't understand the Marxist movement of history, or, you know, you don't understand Nazi racial doctrine, so we don't have to talk to you. We're just going to steamroll you. So regaining our ability to ask questions and then being very suspicious of any so-called expert or public official who refuses to answer questions, who refuses to, acknowledge mistakes. I think it's really important for Americans to regain our confidence in our own ability to govern ourselves. That's the first step.
The author of the week, Dr. Aaron Cariotti. Again, the book, The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone for Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.